Welcome back to Your Zest Life. I'm your host, Genevieve, and this week on Your Zest Life, we are talking all about imposter syndrome, what it is, who experiences it, how the concept came to be, and how to create a habit of working in harmony with imposter syndrome to not just feel confident in our lives, but more competent in our relationships, careers, health, and achievements. Something I found interesting while researching for this podcast is that imposter syndrome is a relatively new concept that emerged in the 1970s around the second wave of the women's rights movement. In this episode, I share more about this phenomenon and the specifics of how imposter syndrome can affect minorities and marginalized groups because of the effects of systemic racism, xenophobia, classism, and other biases. Because this week was also a week that Mercury was in retrograde, I also talk a little more about what that actually means and why this is a great time to develop new perspectives and see things in a different light, such as seeing how imposter syndrome can actually strengthen our ability to see the value in ourselves and take ownership of our abilities. I really enjoyed doing the research for this episode and would love to dive deeper into continuing this conversation. So if you or someone you know has studied more into the findings of imposter syndrome, I would love to have you reach out to me on social at Genevieve_Nutting Howarth, or send me an email at Genevieve.Nutting@gmail.com. As always, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Your Zest Life, and thank you so much for listening. Your Zest Life is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com, Boise, or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468. Welcome back, Life Zesters. I'm so happy you're here. How's your day? How has your week been? Mercury is in retrograde this week, if you follow astrology. I have started to get more into astrology lately, just in that being fascinated by our connection to the universe and how it impacts us. And this week, I just had this connection, like feeling off, feeling very like this chaotic energy at the beginning of the week. And then end of the week, just felt completely depleted. And it's funny because, so my husband, Luke, he has always had some sort of awareness of like how emotions and actions align with the cycle of the moon. I don't know if he actually fully understands it, but I remember one time, I don't know, I think I was like on my period or something, and he said, oh, well, that makes sense that you'd be acting that way because there's a full moon outside. And I remember I looked at him first and was like, are you saying that like I'm acting like crazy or, you know, very defensive? And he's like, no, the lunar cycle. And since then, I've gotten really into studying like how the lunar cycle and the menstrual cycle line up. And that's something where I would love to have somebody on here and actually explain like the history behind that and the connection behind our universe and us and our connection to each other and the planets. But this week in particular, I can totally feel it. And I believe when I read this, gosh, by the time you hear this, I think we'll have less than 2 weeks left of being in retrograde. But in all seriousness, this is, I've always had this, you know, I think that some of us carry that curious child in us throughout our life, and it's a little more prevalent. And my husband and I are very curious individuals. And so I was curious as to like, what does this actually mean when Mercury is in retrograde? And so I looked it up, and it's an astrological phenomenon. So Mercury is a faster moving planet. So it takes 88 days to orbit the sun as opposed to Earth's 365 days. So during retrograde, it appears as if Mercury seems to slow down or move backwards from west to east. And what this does is that it starts to have an effect on our energy levels. It starts to zap your energy away, which can leave you feeling lethargic, just feeling like you want to rest. It can also create chaotic energy. So this feeling of being anxious, of nervous, being unfocused. It can also affect your relationships. So causing communication to be disrupted or misconstrued. You might feel like you're saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, or maybe you and your partner or your friend are not understanding each other. You can overthink or second guess your actions. It also affects technology. So if you've been feeling like your phone is acting up, or I don't know, your emails are being weird, that's another thing that can be affected. And then, of course, when I'm looking at like the causes of something, I also want to find like, what are the solutions here? So I found an article that was all about how to survive retrograde. So proofreading everything, right? Taking time and slowing down. And I think that's something that we could do in our day-to-day lives anyways. But proofreading, choosing your words carefully. Again, the more I read over these, the more I'm like, these are things that we should actually be doing every day. And I feel like maybe we're the ones who are just speeding up in life, and that Mercury in retrograde is a reminder to us to slow down. This is totally going in like a different direction than I thought I was going to go, by the way. I'm like having this huge epiphany while I'm reading this to you. But avoid signing contracts or review them extra carefully, which again, you should always review a contract extra carefully. Back up your data and then plan for travel mishaps. It's interesting, right? Again, I don't know what you felt this week, but I felt all of this. I was very chaotic earlier in the week. I wasn't sleeping very well, just felt really anxious. Luke and I were having to work really intentionally on our communication. I had this very like hyper-focused, anxious, out-of-body feeling. I scheduled appointments wrong. I completely missed an appointment yesterday. I showed up when my appointment was ending rather than beginning. I actually started driving here at 9 o'clock for a 9 o'clock appointment, even though I was supposed to be here at 11. So totally got my weeks wrong. And then yesterday I was exhausted, like to the point where I put my pajamas on at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and just worked from home on the couch the rest of the day. It's been an interesting week. And the topic we're going to talk about today came up earlier in the week. And it's something that when I've asked you what you would like to hear on this podcast and what topics are of interest to you, this is a topic that's come up a lot. And so when I was having this like chaotic feeling, you know, something that I've taken note of is that when I'm at Cycle Bar and I'm teaching cycle classes, is I have to be really present in myself so that I can lead a class that feels doable for everybody and that feels just like cohesive and successful and riders leave feeling just like they accomplished something. And I felt that out of body feeling and just started to feel kind of disconnected, started to get in my head. I started to think about what I was doing with Womenist, started to think about like if I was doing everything I could for all my clients for coaching, and this feeling of what we would associate with imposter syndrome started to come up, you know, asking myself questions of, you know, why am I deserving to be doing what I'm doing? Is what I'm doing actually making a difference? Am I really even good at my job, or could I be better? Which some of those questions you could take and say, you know, we can always be better. You know, and it is good to be asking ourselves, checking in, is what I'm doing making a difference? What could I be doing to be making a bigger difference? But what's interesting about this topic of imposter syndrome is I haven't had it as often until recently in conversations lately with friends, with clients, and across social. But what's more interesting to me is that while this is what appears to be so widely felt, it's not as frequently discussed as, say, topics like fear, disappointment, failure, anger, sadness, topics where it's almost easier to normalize them in a way that spins a negative experience or sensation into a positive solution or outcome. And while all of those topics, you know, fear, pain, disappointment, are forms of vulnerability to discuss, imposter syndrome seems to be a vulnerable discussion that in a way almost detracts from our credibility by discussing that we experience it, where I think the conversations from those other topics can assist in building our credibility by, again, coming up with those positive outcomes, if that makes sense. And credibility is what we're looking for, right? When trying to gain this traction, whether it be in our business or in our lives, our relationships. And I think that through more discussions about imposter syndrome, this can be something that we can learn. So we can learn how to use imposter syndrome to use as a way of connecting roadblocks and divergence and how to use them as a way to strengthen our abilities and mindset. So again, this is something that I'm still better understanding, and I'm looking forward to understanding this better with you. And like with anything we're trying to understand, you know, we ask questions. Again, that curiosity, why does something happen? What is the effect of this when it happens? I asked you as well on social, you know, what are your thoughts on imposter syndrome? Do you currently experience imposter syndrome? Of which 77% of you said that you currently experience imposter syndrome. And I'd be curious if that was phrased differently in a form of have you ever or are you currently, what the percentage would be like there. But questions like, is imposter syndrome why we struggle to take compliments? Is this why we look for validation from others? Is it why people view us differently than we ourselves view who we are? Is it part of why we fear success more than we fear failure? Because success is something, right, that we kind of feel like can get taken away from us, but fear is something that we live so prevalently in. And someone else asked, you know, why do I feel bad when things go in my favor? Is it that we feel undeserving of that success? So those are just a few questions that, you know, came up in my mind, and also some questions that you guys asked, that when putting together this conversation or this discussion, I allowed to help create the bones of what we're going to talk about today. So I encourage you at this point, if you haven't already, this is definitely going to be one where you're going to want to have something to write with or something to take notes on. There will be steps of action. So we're going to go over 5 steps after talking about what imposter syndrome is that you can actually do to work with imposter syndrome. And one of the first things I want to talk about is that we can experience imposter syndrome in a multitude of different situations. And just a few of those being, one, our relationships, thinking, you know, I don't deserve to be with someone like you. Or in our career, thinking, I don't know what I'm doing. How did I get this title? Or the inability to even own up to the title, take ownership of it. We can experience imposter syndrome in our successes. So how we first define success, creating different rules or barriers for success. Something I see a lot in my career is in health, the health industry. So when someone reaches a fitness goal, whether it's losing weight, gaining weight, some sort of body composition, it's hard to hold space in their body. There's almost this disassociation with this body that's changing. And because of this, a lot of eating disorders and body dysmorphia can come from it, because we struggle to identify with these changes that are going on in our body. You know, and there's others, which at this point, you know, whether it's right now or after we talk a little bit more about what imposter syndrome is, I encourage you to ask yourself, you know, where do you feel imposter syndrome? And one of the questions that when I put this up as, you know, what your thoughts on imposter syndrome was, is what is imposter syndrome? You know, while it's not widely discussed, it definitely is coming up more in conversations. And, you know, one of the biggest things I found is that, you know, it's doubting our abilities, feeling like we're a fraud or feeling like we're incapable. It really affects high achievers who are unable to internalize and accept their success. So there's this feeling of discomfort. We kind of second guess our actions. We second guess, am I worthy? It creates anxiety in our workplace. It creates anxiety in our relationships. And what I think is important to bring up is that someone can come off as confident, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they feel competent in what they do. So you can look at someone and think, well, they're arrogant, like they're confident, but it doesn't mean that they don't struggle with imposter syndrome. So the concept of this is actually relatively new to us. It just came around in the 1970s and was described by psychologists Suzanne Imes and Pauline Rose Clance. And originally, this was thought to be unique to women. And they said in their studies that despite outstanding academic and professional accomplishments, women who experience the imposter phenomenon persist in believing that they are really not bright and have fooled anyone who thinks otherwise. So this for me, because of my involvement with womenist community and the involvement that we've had at looking at, you know, women's rights and looking at where women's opportunities are, this is really interesting. So let's think about what's going on in the 1970s. 1970s was around the middle of the second wave of feminism, so the first wave of feminism, early 1900s, was focused on women's legal rights. The second wave was more focused on women's experience. So think about our role in politics, in the workplace, our sexuality. And so it would make sense then that this imposter syndrome, if they're studying it within women, is that we're taking on these new roles, these new experiences where we haven't seen a lot of women having, you know, big success in or making big statements in. And so now when we do find success, it's this feeling that we haven't quite seen as prevalent in. And what we know now is that it can affect every human. And I would argue that this affects every person, that if you're listening to this, that there has been a time in your life where you have experienced some sort of feeling of imposter syndrome. It's a very normal feeling to have, and it's a conversation that even my husband and I were talking about. Like, he's experienced imposter syndrome in his workplace. We've also found that while it does affect every human, minorities and marginalized groups are more likely to experience imposter syndrome because of the effects of systemic racism, xenophobia, classism, as well as other biases stemming from, you know, feeling isolated and having different interests, different experiences, the lack of relatability and representation of people who look like you and have similar experiences to you in the media, communities, and in roles of leadership. That's why it's super, super important that in the media that we are doing our due diligence of having representation of all humans, of all abilities. Okay, I feel like I was going to get sidetracked on that, but I thought that was really important to bring up when it comes to discussing imposter syndrome. The next thing I thought was really interesting, and I would be intrigued to see in 10 years if this changes, because I think in the mental health industry, we're seeing so much growth and so much more knowledge and education and resources come up. But imposter syndrome, the phenomenon, isn't an official diagnosis listed in the DSM or ICD mental disorders. So what this means is that psychologists acknowledge that it is a specific form of intellectual self-doubt and that imposter feelings are generally accompanied by mental disorders such as anxiety and depression. So while they're linked, imposter syndrome still isn't an official diagnosis listed underneath mental disorders. But because they are related or they might go hand in hand with anxiety and depression, I'd be interested to see if, you know, in 10 years this is diagnosed as a mental disorder and something where we see more resources for it. So something I found interesting is that imposter phenomenon, that this isn't an official diagnosis listed in the DSM or on the ICD mental disorders, meaning psychologists acknowledge that while it is a specific form of intellectual self-doubt and that while these feelings are generally accompanied by mental disorders such as anxiety and depression, it isn't actually diagnosed as a mental disorder in and of itself. However, just like anxiety and depression, imposter syndrome is something that many will suffer in silence from. That's why it's so important to be having these conversations. There's this fear of talking about it, being exposed as, you know, unworthy or insignificant of our achievements, our titles, our experiences, our success. And this one we won't get too far into, but you can actually break it down into five different types. So if this is something that you're really intrigued by, I mean, this is like, there's podcasts out there that's their specific topic. Every week they talk about something different relating to imposter syndrome. And there's five different types that have been categorized by Dr. Valerie Young. You have the perfectionist, the superwoman, superman, the natural genius, the soloist, and the expert. So if this is of interest to you, maybe looking online and seeing, I know they've got like quizzes that you can take to figure out. But I want to go back to Mercury for 1 minute because the two do connect. But another really cool thing about this retrograde happening is, you know, I'm always looking for the silver lining. I'm always looking for the opportunity. And what I read is that especially this specific Mercury in retrograde is a really great opportunity to shift our perspective and see things in a different light. So by seeing things in a different light, we can identify that the obstacles we are experiencing are actually detours, and that the challenges that we might be facing right now are stepping stools. If you are feeling like you're having a downfall, that this could actually be your comeback. You know, it's a great opportunity to take back the power for things that we feel are in control and take them into our own hands. And again, identify, you know, what's the problem? What's the solution? Okay, so let's get to the point where this is where we're going to talk about how to work with imposter syndrome, right? Because just like anger and fear and frustration and failure, these are all going to be existing in our lives. We need to learn how to create a habit and how to coexist in harmony with it. So first, now that you know what imposter syndrome is, identify it when you feel in your life. So like with anything you're working on, we have to identify what it is so that we know how to treat it. An example that I thought of when I was trying to think of like a comparison or an analogy was the night that I met Luke, which if you listen to our episode together, you know that I was a creepazoid and I found him on a Facebook invite to a St. Patrick's Day party and got myself invited to that party. I knew nobody there, by the way. I only knew the host because he was a trainer at the gym that I worked out at. And the girlfriend who I went with, she went to high school with this guy. So that's the only person who we actually knew. And I show up in my little cardigan and heels. And it's a college party, so everyone else is not in cardigan and heels. I think I just come from, I just came from like emceeing a local pageant. But I show up, walk in, and immediately this woman points to me and she says, "I don't know her." Almost like in that Mean Girls scene where she's like, "She doesn't even go here." And immediately I felt like, I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be here. I don't know anybody. I don't belong. What am I doing here? And that just kind of to me was like a picture of a small glimpse of what imposter syndrome feels like. You know, this feeling of not deserving to be somewhere, feeling out of place. And the first full-blown imposter syndrome I really experienced and can remember very vividly is when I first moved home. And when I would go to dinners with Luke, and he at the time worked for Simplot, he would go to a lot of client dinners. And I had just come from a corporate world where I was used to going to these client dinners and I was used to being someone who had a title and who could really easily say, you know, what I did with my job and my role. And so to be in that opposite role of I'm going with my husband who, you know, is very successful and just very well known in his company. And then when people would ask me, you know, what I do, it was a huge first big lack of security in what I did because I didn't really know how to identify what it was that I did because I think there was lack of clarity in, first off, like what a health and fitness coach was at the time. And I also didn't feel like from what I knew, those people who were holding roles as a health and fitness coach, I, in comparison, right, which comparison I think is a big, big part of imposter syndrome. In comparison, I felt like I had no space to hold at the table if I were to sit down with other health coaches. And so I felt this need to prove myself by giving this whole list of like, I'm a personal trainer and I teach fitness classes and I'm certified in yoga and dance and cycle. And oh yeah, I also work with girls and I sit on the Girl Scout board and work with at-risk girls on building confidence. And it just, it really was a feeling of who am I to be here? And at that time, I really did. I felt this feeling of, you know, I think that age is a big thing. I felt too young and too inexperienced to step into these roles. And this is where I would then have you take action in thinking, where are areas that you have experienced imposter syndrome in your life? Or where are you currently experiencing imposter syndrome in your life? Right? So that's the first thing to do. The second thing is, once you've identified where the imposter syndrome exists, is to take ownership. Take ownership of who you are. So what roles do you serve? What titles do you hold? So in trying to introduce myself with this whole list of things that I did, I realized I was coming up with these roles that I do and these titles, but I didn't have the confidence or the ability or the awareness to summarize them all together. So to do this, then you would create a mission statement, essentially. So what businesses do, because your life is your business and the role that you serve within that life. So creating a mission statement, you start with, who do you serve? How do you serve them? And what's the end result? So you would take the different roles that you serve. So for me, it's, you know, I'm the founder of Womanesque Community. I'm a health coach. I'm the lead Cycle Star instructor. And then I would create a mission statement from that. So for Womanesque Community, it was, I'm the CEO of a women's nonprofit that empowers thousands of women to enrich their lives and communities through mindfulness, movement, and community impact. And then I could go and I could do that for all the other titles that I might have, including, you know, you could even come up with a mission statement for your role as a partner, your role as a friend, right? Your role as a citizen in your community. This really gives a lot of empowerment to us. And I think that last part, especially, like, what's your mission statement and your role to your community? And it gives you a sense of purpose and a sense of belonging. And that's, at the end of the day, as humans, like, that's what we want, is we want to feel this feeling of belonging and not this feeling of isolation. Okay, so the third thing is to stop making deals with yourself with if-then statements. So I see this a lot in the health and wellness world. If I lose 15 pounds, then I'll be happy. You know, we see this also career-focused. If I make six figures, then I'll be successful. Right, so let's go back to taking ownership. We sometimes have difficulties taking up space in a title we hold because of if-then statements. We feel like if the if-then statement hasn't come into fruition, then we can't actually take that role, right? So I think this also leads to a lot of inability to take compliments or to fully own a role because of perfectionism, because of comparison, because of a lack of confidence, right? So I can't run a marathon, so I'm not really a runner. I don't coach full time, so I'm not a real coach. I think that we can all think of something in our lives where we've placed those restrictions on ourselves. So what I would encourage you then is to create I am because I statements. So you're rewriting this narrative instead of saying, these, if I do this, then this will happen. You rewrite it in a form of, I am a runner because I woke up this morning and ran around my neighborhood. I am a health coach because I coach individuals on how to live their best lives. So this is where I would ask for you to take an if-then statement that you've created for yourself, right? Whether in your career, your lifestyle, your relationships, your goals, and then how can you turn those into I am because I statements. And it might take a little bit, right? Even trying to say that out loud, it's like a tongue twister kind of. And I think if then statements and the struggle to fully take up space is part of why we also struggle to take compliments and we strive for outside validation, which is what step four is. Step four is just take the compliment. My sister and I, when I was last down there visiting her, I gave her a compliment and she gave me the compliment right back. And I'm like, no, I'm not looking for the compliment. I don't even know what if it was. I think I said, gosh, you're so, I just looked at her. She's growing up. She's, let's see here. I'm 32. She's 28. That's so weird to me. But she, like just looked so grown up that trip. And it was like the first time I've really seen her as something other than my younger sister, if that makes sense. She's got this new social account where she's posting her artwork, and she's working for this mental health company on helping to edit mental health journals, and just is, oh, she's so cool. I want to have her on here soon. But I did, I just looked at her and I was like, I'm so proud of you. Like, you're doing such a great job. And she's like, you're doing a great job. I said, no, like, just take the compliment. She goes, deflection. I said, what? She goes, yeah, I've been, you know, we had this conversation about deflection, that we deflect compliments onto other people because it's difficult for us to take compliments. And so now if I give her a compliment, or if she gives me a compliment and I give it right back, she's like, deflection. And we're really working on taking these compliments. And what's interesting to me in this is that we as humans are constantly striving for external validation. Or as my husband would put it, he said that we question our external position in the world with internal self-doubt, right? Such a smart thing to say. And this is where I think this answers a question that we asked initially at the beginning of this podcast is, you know, is imposter syndrome part of why we look for validation from others? Is it because our personal success doesn't feel real until it's acknowledged by others? Which in that case, if someone compliments you and you're looking for external validation, then isn't that what we were looking for? And why is it so difficult for us to just take the compliment, you know, instead of deflecting it? And I think that there's, as much as we want external validation, I think that there's an internal fear of success that takes up more space than our fear for failure. You know, is that because we're so used to the grind of climbing and climbing that when we reach the top, we're unsure as to how to handle it? Or this feeling of, you know, maybe we've had success taken away from us before, or maybe we've, you know, in those states where we've been happy, we've had that happiness taken from us. And so it's almost easier to stay in a place of fear, or easier to stay in a place of that fear of failure, rather than to exist in a place where we have found success, but there's fear of having that success taken away. Interesting. I think that there's just a lot that gets wrapped around that. And that's where, again, this could be a totally different conversation. And I would love, if you're someone who studies this or has more knowledge on it, I would love to interview you and have more of a conversation, because I think that there's a link there. But something then that I would encourage you is to get in the habit of giving and receiving a compliment, because this allows us to focus on the good and to see the good within us and to see the good within others. You know, but let's think, where does a compliment mean the most coming from? Right? Think about, if someone were to give you a compliment, who does it mean the most coming from? You know, chances are it's someone who really cares about you, who really sees the good in you, who wants the best for you, someone who has seen you go through the struggles to get to where you are today. That compliment means a whole lot more, you know, than a stranger on the street who knows nothing about you. And then if you were to look even deeper into this, the science behind it is that when we get a compliment, it signals to our brain, hey, do this again. Hey, you're encouraged to keep going. Like, you're capable. But we have to acknowledge it, right? If we deflect it, we kind of block off that signal. And also, just a little bonus, is that it also improves long-term memory. So your action for this one is to just say thank you. The next time someone gives you a compliment, just say thank you, right? And, you know, try not to, like, avoid eye contact. Like, give them a sincere, this really made my day to hear that. Thank you so much. Or, I really appreciate you saying something. Or, you know what? I put a lot of work into this. Thank you for recognizing it. This is huge. And it also will encourage others to continue to giving you that compliment. I think that's in our community, right? We talked about this last week with Natalie, but a community that acknowledges one another and that sees the best in each other. I would add another bonus then, is that give a compliment to someone else. Give a genuine compliment to somebody else, and then take note of, like, how they respond. How does it make you feel when someone deflects your compliment? How does it make you feel when someone acknowledges your compliment? Just something interesting to take note of this week. The last thing is that nobody has it figured out. Nobody. Look at the most successful people. They don't have it figured out. In this world, we compare ourselves so much to external sources, and we feel the need to have everything ironed out, all the details, identify potential problems, and have readily available solutions. And this is where perfectionism goes hand in hand with imposter syndrome. One thing that I mentioned before, I can't remember which podcast it was on, but was the importance of asking questions. You know, I think that we fear asking questions because it makes us look dumb, because it makes us look inadequate or negates our personal abilities and credibility. Asking questions, though, is going to help us to figure out the next steps. You know, and also asking questions is a great way to form relationships. People love to talk about what they know, right? If someone asks you for your expertise on something that you know something about, gosh, how, like, what a stroke to your ego. Like, how good does that feel if someone's asking you for your advice, if someone's asking you for your help? That's how we form relationships. So if you're looking to make a new friend, ask them questions. And then the last part of this idea of no one having it figured out is be okay with imperfect action, meaning that you can move forward, you can take action without the need to have the roadmap all figured out. So your action here is that from the areas where you initially identify yourself experiencing imposter syndrome, come up with a few questions that would help you feel more competent in that area, and then list some resources and actually reach out to them, right? So I don't want you to just do the homework and then not carry it out. I want you to do the homework and then I want you to reach out. All right, so in summary here, imposter syndrome is when we doubt our own abilities, that we might feel like a fraud. It affects high achievers who are unable to internalize and accept their success. And it leads to a feeling of discomfort and second guessing ourselves, giving us anxiety in the workplace, our relationships, our career, our success. And that we can be confident and not competent at the same time. So how we work with imposter syndrome, you've got your five steps. First, identify imposter syndrome as it exists in your life. Take ownership of who you are and ask questions to help you to work with imposter syndrome, to feel more competent. Step three, stop making deals with yourselves with if-then statements and replace them with I am because I statements. Step four is take the compliment and then give a compliment. And then remembering last that nobody has it figured out. All right, gang, I hope that you enjoyed this and that you found it valuable. Next week, I get to have my husband on, which is going to be a real treat. He's actually going to come into the studio with me. So look out for that podcast. And as always, gosh, I hope that this just leaves you feeling exuberant and feeling excited about living your zest life. I'll see you next time. All right. Thank you so much for listening. I hope this episode brought some zest into your life. And if you think this podcast will bring value to someone else, please feel free to share. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please like, subscribe, and leave a review. You can also find more insight on my Instagram at Genevieve_Nuttinghower, and click the link in this episode's description where you can find my website. All right, I can't wait to rally with you next week.